Monday, April 19th. Kevin Barker, as we predicted at the start of the year, the Boston Red Sox are leading the AL East. The Kansas City Royals are leading the AL Central. And not to be outdone, the AL West is being led by the Seattle Mariners. We had all of this. Remember? Remember how I told you to stop picking the Rays and to go all in on the Red Sox? Remember
I told you? Yeah, I also told you the Yankees are going to have the worst record in baseball.
Yeah. Whew. It's all upside down. It's all upside down. The Red Sox, they're 10-6. They're busy beating the bejesus out of the Chicago White Sox right now. The Jays will play the Red Sox in a two-game series starting tomorrow. And this will leave Boston 11-6. My Tampa Bay Rays are 8-8. Your Baltimore Orioles are 7-9. Your Toronto Blue Jays are 7-9.
Go, Rays, go!
There you go, Rays, go. And sucking a hind tit in the American League East, none other than the New York Yankees at 5-10.
Can you say that on the radio?
I just did. The New York Yankees at 5-10.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah.
What's wrong with you? Seriously.
So, Barker, explain this to me. Ahead of two games against the Boston Red. No, let me. Okay, I'm going to put it in a different way. I got to put it a different way to you. We will talk. By the way, the text line is 590-590. Josh Palacios is going to join us later on in the show. It's a great interview and got a lot of really good stories, a lot of meaningful stories. So we're looking forward to talking to Josh Palacios during the show. And again, get your texts in, 590-590. Lots to talk about. The Dodgers and the Padres had that great weekend series.
Was it great?
You know what? Thank you for saying that. Everybody said
great?
One game was really, really good. The others are...
I walked away from that series knowing exactly what I knew before the series started.
Well, this gets to my... Perfect lead-in to my question for you. And it's gonna focus on the Yankees and Dodgers. What is the more real record? Dodgers are 13-3. Yankees are 5-10 and in last place. What record is the more real record to you?
The Yankees.
Wow, really?
Yeah, the surprise, the 13-3 doesn't surprise me.
No, but that's what I mean. So
the Dodgers. Well, that's you kind of expected the Dodgers to do that. I mean,
okay. I'm trying to put it
26.
I'm trying to put it in context. We're not surprised that the Dodgers are the best team. The Dodgers, I'll say this right now, the Dodgers are going to smash the record for most wins in the season this year.
You think so?
I think they are going to smash that record.
I think they might pull the chute in September and start giving guys days off to get ready for the playoffs. I don't know about that.
But, Kevin, they can give guys days off, and they're going to be replacing guys
with... Their second team's better than most first teams.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, the Yankees look old to me.
Well,
that's one of the things. They look easy to pitch to. They look a little bit like the Blue Jays lineup right now. They're really right-handed, and if you can get a guy that can go fastball away, you can get a guy and occasionally, you know, establish a fastball in and mix in a slider away, something that's spinning. Don't really have to be a slider. It could be a breaking ball. It could be a changeup, something that feeds off the fastball. Yeah, I'm not sure that the Yankees are a great fastball-hitting team. I'm not sure the Blue Jays are a great fastball-hitting team. I think lineups that – in 2021 that are good, look at them. What do? They're aggressive early in counts. You watch the Cubbies. I'm not saying the Cubbies got a great lineup.
Watch the Braves.
Freddie Freeman couldn't wait to walk from the on-deck circle and get to swinging it. Mm-hmm. He looks for something hard early in count that's a strike, and he puts his best swing on it that he could possibly put on it. It's rare now that you're seeing. I know it's early, and we tend to get all, you know, excited about how they get off to slow starts. But look at the Yankees. They overswing. They take strikes. They take fastballs for strikes. Who's that look like? Mm. It's like the Blue Jays lineup.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point here is, you know, until for me, the Blue Jays, and I said this last year, I'll continue to say this, is it they can't hit the fastball or they're not approached mechanically to hit fastballs. And what's between their ears, they're not ready to hit fastballs. Is that it? Which one is it? Now, you know, again, this is getting back to the hitting coach. What's the, you know, the approach is it's like when you face a guy you never faced before. And why would I go up looking for anything that's spinning? I have no idea which way that thing looks like it's spinning. Is it going down and away? But I know his fastball might have a little run to it. But for the most part, I know it's hard And I know it's going to be outer third, a bunch of the plate. Why not look for that? Try and put your best swing on that and then try and get a pitcher out of the way he's wanting to attack you. That's the only way you get him out of it, is you got to go up and start hammering fastballs, and then that will get you more hangers. It's just a sometimes tough watch. Now, again, you got a bunch of guys in your lineup for the Blue Jays that probably shouldn't be there on a consistent basis, you know, because of all the things that are going on. You don't have your leadoff hitter. You don't have your cleanup hitter. You don't have Kevin Biggio. Look, Kevin Biggio, for me, is not one of the top five hitters. He's the bottom of the order. But what he could do is make the bottom of the order better. That would make the top of the order that much better.
Here's a couple of things I want to say about the Yankees, and then we'll move on to the Jays. But I never thought, look, I told you I thought the Rays are going to win the division. I still think they're going to win the division. But I never thought that by this point of the year, I would see the Yankees 5-10, and Garrett Cole's given them historically good pitching.
Yeah.
If I told you at the start of the year that 15 games into the season, Aaron Boone would have held a closed-door meeting, which he does not like to do, to rip into his team. If I had told you that 15 games in the season, the Yankees had mismanaged their roster and misplayed their hand so badly that DJ LeMahieu was going to be the everyday first baseman. And if I told you that the Yankees, you know, we know the Yankees and Rays hate each other. They throw at each other. You know, with the last two series, the series at the end of last year, remember when Kevin Cash made the comment about, I got a bunch of guys I can bring out of the bullpen to throw 100. And then the first series this year in Tampa, remember all the hit batters and the hard feelings and all this. Yankees, none of that this weekend. Yankees went down with a whimper. The Yankees looked like whipped dogs. Their fans were booing them, the whole thing. I never, as much as I thought people were overrating the Yankees, I never thought it would get like this. And I know our friend Sweeney Murdy today in his podcast, you know what question he's asking? At what point do you start talking about the manager, the coaches, and the GM? That's where things are.
Yeah, it's a little early for that, isn't it?
No, he's not calling for it, but he's, no, I don't think it is. In that city, I don't think it is. You know why it's not as well? Because you know who's in first place in the National League East right now?
The Mets. If they were to lose five games in a row in June, would anybody be having this conversation? The only reason they're having this conversation is because LeMahieu's off to a slow start. Judge is off to a slow start. Aaron Hicks, everybody keeps yelling and screaming about why is he hitting third?
He should be down in the
– Well, because, again, it gets to the lineup and how you can mix up the righties. That's the only reason
he's the thing.
There.
No, here's the thing, Bark. Here's why I think people are reacting to that. Because I wasn't the only person in baseball saying that this team doesn't stay healthy, that it's got a lot of smoke and mirrors when it comes to its pitching staff, that losing Zach Britton was a big blow to this team, that it could be easy to pitch to. There are a lot of people around baseball looking at the Yankees and going, you know, yeah, there are some weaknesses there. And I think maybe the average fan just looked at them, oh, my God, they got Stanton, they got Judge, they got Torres. So I think part of the reason is there was a suspicion all along that the Yankees would have some flaws. And let's also point this out. The Yankees haven't exactly won a ton of World Series in recent years. They have not been the dominant team in baseball in recent years.
Yeah, American League, or the American League for me is very top heavy. There's a lot of bad teams in the American League.
Do you include them in that group?
I mean, right now, because nobody's hitting, and nobody's hitting homers. And that's a big deal for the Yankees. And today, you're not going to string together three or four hits and then a guy clear the bases with a double. Just doesn't happen that way. You get a bloop and a bomb a lot of times. That's how the Yankees bludgeon people, is they do it that way. Right now, they're not doing that. And people are going to throw their hands in the air and yell and scream about the manager. You know as well as I do, the manager's got nothing to do with this. He's got nothing to do with all of those guys that are not hitting.
Right.
He just doesn't.
Right. But there does come a time, especially in New York, where you have so much media around the team, where people are going to start poking through the entrails, right? Yeah. They're going to start saying, okay, look, I'm with you. It took me years to come around to your point of view, but the World Series settled it for me last year when I saw Kevin Cash taking Blake Snell out.
Yeah.
This game, the manager's role now is completely different. The manager is an extension of the front office.
Salesman.
He's a salesman. He so sure I got all that. But you know what? You can say that. But then if you tell me that the manager is basically a salesman, then I look at Aaron Boone and go, I don't know if his boys are buying what he's selling.
What would he be selling?
Well, you just finished.
What is he selling, Judge?
Telling me that he's a salesman.
What is he selling, Giancarlo Stanton?
If you get back to the start of this season, remember the issue surrounding Aaron Judge. He wasn't in the lineup. He wasn't healthy. But Aaron Boone said, well, actually, I remember the question Mario Rivera asked him. Do you consider Aaron Judge hurt? And he said, no. There's something going on with that team.
Mm.
There's something going on with that team. Anyhow, we go ahead. We got plenty of time to talk about
the Yankees. Yeah, maybe.
But I think there's something going on there. And
it's rare that you see the Yankees like this. They're very easy to pick on now. They truly are, because you never see it this way.
Mark, as I told you,
slow start like this, you never see it that way, and it doesn't help that other team in New York is doing what they're doing.
There's not a lot of fight in that team right now.
I think they're easy to pitch to. The playoffs will tell you a lot about that team. They're really heavily dominated right-handed batters,
and
they're
not. Last year.
If you get a halfway decent pitcher who can establish into that team with something hard and get them looking in, open up that front hip and then spin that slider away, it's not the easiest thing to get them out.
No, the other thing about the Yankees too is they can play some really, really sloppy baseball. There's a lot of
defense, not great.
There's a lot of fraying at the edges around the team. All right, we've talked about the Yankees. Let's talk about the Blue Jays. Losers of 3-4 to the Kansas City Royals, 2-0 yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Sal Perez, beast. But so much to talk about out of this series. I'm going to start in a positive here. I think it's a positive. I do want to talk about the starting pitching. I want to talk about Hyunjin Ryu. I want to talk about Steve Matz, mm-hmm. who again did Steve Matz type stuff this series. Robbie Ray yesterday.
Seen anything like that? You've seen a guy walk six people, leave 18 people on base, give up four stolen bases, and give up no runs.
I'm going to see something because I remember Roy Halladay.
I've never seen
it. That's quite often a tall order. It's not that unusual. What has really surprised me, or what really surprised me yesterday, was just how often he got out of those jams.
Yeah.
With contact, like he didn't get out of the jams. He didn't strike. I'm looking at inning by inning here. He gets out of the jam with a grounder, first inning.
Uh-huh.
Second inning, fly ball. Third inning, grounder. Nothing much happened there. He got out of a lot of his messes without striking guys out.
But what I like about that,
I look at that as a positive.
I like it. He didn't give up any runs. I mean, he could have given the house up.
He didn't. You know what he did? I liked that he didn't give in and say, screw it.
Listen to his Zoom call. Well, if you're a competitor and you got a little backbone, you ain't going to do that. Like I mean, obviously fastball command and slider. You know, slider hasn't been good since he's been back. Just hasn't. I mean, he's been giving it up with the slider. He needs that. He needs the sinker, the four-seamer, and the slider to be working well, and it hasn't. You know, he's a max effort guy. But you listen to his Zoom call. He actually broke down what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And then for a guy, it's like Steven Matz. Now, you listen to Steven Matz talk, and he can tell you right out the gate what he's doing wrong. That's a big deal.
Yes, it is.
The sooner you know it, the quicker you can fix it. That just sounds like that Pete Walker has given them that little, this is what you're doing. And when Robbie Ray was talking, and I was just listening to his Zoom call, and he was saying, this is what he said, too fast with his front side.
Yeah.
Sounds simple, right?
Yep.
Sounds simple that he's saying, I'm too quick with my hips when I'm headed down the mountain. So I'm actually spinning out of it real quick. And what happens is my elbow, my arm's trying to catch up. It's up and away with the heater, and he chokes off the slider, and they're non-competitive pitches. And then he's saying, well, the first three innings were bad. The last two innings were good. So I went back, and I said, that's funny. So I went back, and I looked at that. First three innings, he faced 18 batters. He threw 72 pitches. The last two innings, he faced seven batters. He threw 20 pitches. Seven batters, he only threw 20 pitches to those seven batters. Mm-hmm. Point being is, if a guy like that, who's a max effort guy, can go, okay, I know what it is. Now I can try and figure it out, and I can at least try and give my team a chance. That's kind of nice to hear. It's a nice little mix of, you know, the max effort and going down the mountain and just saying, this is what it is. Now I'm going to try and fix it.
I had a conversation with Pete Walker last year, and I kept the note from it. I actually rewrote it. But it was a conversation with Pete Walker last year in spring training. And we were talking about how every pitcher now will tell you, hey, I like video. You know, I'm using technology. I said, yeah. Pete Walker, all right. What tells you that a guy knows what he's doing when he's in the video room? Like, what's the difference between busy work and really knowing what you're doing? You can tell, this is Pete Walker, you can tell that a pitcher understands how to use video if he gets to the root of his problem sooner. In other words, if he can correct what he's doing wrong in a matter of days or maybe between innings compared to a matter of weeks or months.
Perfect practice makes perfect.
But you know what he's saying? He's saying, and I got that from listening to Robbie. Robbie Ray, that was a guy who went and looked at something and told you. It's like a golfer telling you what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong.
Early in my career, when I was a hitter, I had to take 1,000 swings to figure out what I was doing wrong. At the end of it, I knew what I was doing wrong. It took me 20 swings. That's the difference. I know exactly what I'm doing. I know exactly what I need to go in and fix. The sooner I can fix it, the better off I'm going to be. And it's just fun. I know Steven Matz didn't give up a hit until whenever he gave up a hit in that doubleheader. I didn't think that was his best outing.
No,
he faced 21 batters. He threw 9 strike ones. He threw 82 pitches. He threw 48 strikes. That's not it. That's not good.
Yeah.
But again, it's that thing of when something's not working, how do I get the train back on the tracks just to give him a chance? That's what we're out here for. It's just kind of nice to see and listen and hear guys talk the way they talk that have a track record of not having a clue. Like when it falls off the tracks, the train's going, you know, it's falling over and it's wrecking all over the place. It's just fun to listen to.
We got a couple of minutes, and I want to break because Josh Palacios is going to join us. But very quickly, because I want to save the last part of the show to look ahead to the Red Sox and also to talk about the Jays hitting issues. But I want to ask you right now, during the telecast, much was made of the fact that Charlie brought TJ Zoik in the game. TJ Zoik, sinker ball guy.
Yeah.
And that the suggestion was, not that Charlie made a mistake, but the suggestion was that bringing TJ Zoik into the game, because he relies on a feel pitch, because he was used, you know, earlier in games, that maybe essentially they were asking TJ Zoik yesterday to do something that they shouldn't have been asking.
Yeah, I think if TJ Zoik can't do that out of the bullpen, TJ Zoik's probably not going to be in the big leagues.
There you go.
I think that's a lot more asking.
Okay.
And I think it's real hard to pick on Charlie and Petey about the bullpen, best bullpen ERA in baseball. Mm-hmm.
But people,
how are you going to pick at that and say
I'm just saying
that
people,
and the other? Look,
people pointed it out. People pointed it out.
Yeah, again, it is a feel pitch is the sinker. We all know that, but it's been running that way ever since he's been looking back at the scoreboard, seeing the 95 mile an hour fastballs. He's not a 95 mile an hour guy. He is a 92, 93 with power sink. When it ain't power sinking, for me, he's probably not a big leaguer. And I've been a big fan of TJ. I think he's got good stuff. I think he comes down the hill. I think he's a hard at bat. You know, he's not an easy take when you're a hitter because of how late it moves when it is moving. Right now, it's not moving. If it ain't moving, and he can't do it out of the bullpen. For me, he can't start, and he can't come out of the bullpen. You probably need to think about what you want to do with him. He's one of those guys, for me, on days off, you probably want to hide your cell phone. Like I used to be when I played. You know, you go to a movie, or you order a movie because you can't go out to a movie. You might want to turn your cell phone off.
Yeah, the story of this game, 3 pitches. Carlos Santana, single. Sal Perez, home run. And then Jorge Soler, double out.
They were 3 for 23, too. Runners in scoring position in those games. Look, I mean, that's not to be all end all, but you have to get better at that.
Josh Palacios will join us next. This is Baseball Central. Welcome back to Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590. The Fan will be joined in a few seconds by Josh Palacios of the Toronto Blue Jays. The Jays enjoying a day off before starting a very quick two-game series against the Boston Red Sox. It'll be Hyunjin Ryu in the mound for the Jays tomorrow. Eduardo Rodriguez for the Red Sox, who are just crushing the White Sox 11-4 right now.
Yeah, I saw them bunting, too, with first and second, nobody out. Red Sox. And the floodgates opened. A little pressure on some defenses, buddy. Start chucking the ball around. I know you're looking at me. People could see how you were looking at me, but you got a chance to step on somebody's throat.
That was my simulcast you screw you look,
you
by the way.
You do it.
I
like winning, Jeff. I'm saying. How many good defenses you know in baseball? You could count them probably on one hand. One hand.
All right. So, again, the Jays have today off. They will start their brief two-game series against the Red Sox tomorrow. Well, one of the really good stories early in the season for the Toronto Blue Jays, indeed, given the injuries this team has had, you can make the case that one of the timely good stories for the Blue Jays has been Josh Palacios. Of course, Blue Jays outfielder hitting .292 in 30 plate appearances so far with the Toronto Blue Jays. Certainly, I think both Kevin and myself think making a real good case in the absence of Teoscar Hernandez and George Springer. We're very pleased to be joined by Josh Palacios. Josh, thank you so much for joining Kevin and myself. Great to meet you finally. This being COVID and all that, we don't get a chance to spend much time around the team. Thank you for doing this on an off day. Well, just tell me what it's been like so far to be in the major leagues.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you, Jeff and Kevin, for having me on. And it's been amazing. It's like a dream come true. You get to live out the dream. There's no more levels to get called up to. This is it. You're finally here. And it's amazing to be able to be in the hunt, be able to be in a part of a bunch of competitive games and be able to win a bunch of games in the beginning of my early major league career. So it's been a dream come true.
Josh, is there one pitcher that stands out to you? I know you faced Garrett Cole a couple of times, didn't go the greatest. Well, he's been hard on a couple of guys hitting. Obviously, has there been one guy that stood out, you know, that maybe threw you a breaking ball or something? You were like, wow, I've never seen that before.
I mean, I say Garrett Cole probably be the guy. So far, nobody's thrown anything that I've never seen before, but in terms of mixing up pitches, hitting the spots, and changing levels, Garrett Cole did a really good job at that. And he makes it hard because he throws really hard, and he's got a good off-speed as well. So it's hard not to get caught in between. So I definitely say Garrett Cole's the guy.
Josh, you know, we started hearing your name an awful lot in spring training. And I'm wondering, you know, look, last year was obviously a very strange year for Major League Baseball. You were a guy, you were at the alternate site. It seems, it seems as if somehow you managed to turn being at the alternate site, that you managed to build on that by having a good spring training. And as I said, it was about 3 weeks into spring training and we started to hear guys talking about Josh Palacios, guys around the organization saying, hey, you know, the guy that's really kind of caught my eye is this guy. So I almost get the sense that the alternate site for you, that you were able to work on some things and that did you come out of it maybe a better player than you went in?
Yeah, I feel like the alternate site was a blessing for me. I was able to put my head down, grind. We got rid of all the numbers and all the performance aspects, and I really got to focus on the process. One thing that helped tremendously is like stealing bases, you know, and during a season, you got to get to first, and it also has to be the right situation. Coach got to give you a green light, and then you're able to try to take the bag on the right count. But there it was like we'd run in sim games and I get to go to first, steal second. If I get thrown out, I go to first again, steal it again and again and again as many times as I wanted. Getting plenty of at-bats there and kind of being free of worrying about striking out or anything else and being able to focus on like, hey, what's my process? What do I want to do at this plate? Do I want to try a toe tap or just a leg kick? Being able to try all those things without having to worry about consequences helped tremendously.
I know you mentioned on a couple of your Zoom calls that you and Dante Bichette were working on, you know, things offensively to make you better in the box. And then you just mentioned something about being in between. Have you had conversations with Dante about that? And if you have, You know, how do you go about trying to correct that?
One thing Dante has us do is he try to feel the flow of that bat. So before giving away all his secrets, but yeah. We try to just feel the flow of that bat, see what pitches are being thrown, see how you're reacting to certain pitches, and then figuring out from there, trying to get an idea of what the pitcher wants to go to next. Obviously, reading the scouting report, understanding what his strikeout pitches are and what pitches he used to set up, and learning all those things. And then once you get your plan together, one thing we like to talk about is fully committing to what you're doing, being willing to live or die by what you committed to, versus having that little back door, that little voice in the back of your head, where like, well, maybe he throws the change up here. Just being able to let that go and be like, hey, I'm fully selling out to what I'm doing right here.
Okay, I don't know if you've had a two-strike approach. I know Dante's been preaching that. Obviously, Bo's been doing that, and it's sort of a trickle-down effect. Have you always had a two-strike approach? And if not, has it been hard to buy into one?
I've had somewhat of a two-strike approach growing up, but I didn't fully understand what a two-strike approach was. And then I got to hit with Dante a bunch this offseason. Bo being a good friend of mine, hit with him a bunch this offseason. We spent a lot of time together and sort of adopted the two-strike approach there, and I feel like that's helped me tremendously. Just the feeling of being comfortable with two strikes, not in panic mode, and having a plan that I can go to and I can stick to has helped me so much.
Now, I know one of the other things you've talked about as well is growing up in Brooklyn, that as a young player, you worked out indoors, which was in a location that was right across the street from what was Ebbets Field. And we're doing that. You had a chance to learn a lot about Jackie Robinson. Just tell us about that. That's, you know, I would say that if that's where you're working out, there's almost got to be a little bit of destiny involved here, Josh. That would be my takeaway.
I would hope so. But yeah, growing up as a young kid, especially when I first started baseball, in the winters in Brooklyn, you can't get outside, so we usually practice in a basketball gym. And from about, I'd say, 8 years old to about 13 years old, every single day in the winter, we go over there and we practice in that basketball gym with the Bonnies. And every single Sunday, especially, we'd be in there with our team, working out, taking ground balls, hitting in a basketball gym with, like, wiffle balls and all types of stuff like that. And the coaches used to always call out, like, hey, man, Jackie Robinson is going through a lot harder things than you've been going through right now. So if Jackie Robinson could figure it out, you guys could definitely figure it out. So that was one of their go-tos when we had to run suicides. I remember that. But, yeah, I would hope so. There'd be a little destiny in that.
Okay, Josh, I know I've heard you talk about you and Devon White in the alternate site, about talking defense in the outfield. First thing I want to ask you is I've seen you play left, seen you play right. Do you have a favorite? And if you do and if you don't, what's the hardest thing going back and forth from one? Is it running routes? Is it, you know, the drop step? Is it the crossover? Is there one thing you really have to work on?
Honestly, I'm actually very comfortable in all three. Throughout my career, I've been able to play all three. The Blue Jays actually had an initiative when we were in the minor leagues that every game you had to change positions. Oh. And every game you'd go either right, center, or left. And after the game, you change to the next position. So I was actually prepared for that thanks to the guys and what they did in the minor leagues. But the hardest thing I'd say is probably just like playing with a backwards remote control when you go from right to left. I do it, but everything's a little backwards, so you got to kind of reset your mind, reset how you're thinking about it. And also, you guys probably know when the righties hit the ball to right, it's going to hook, but when the righty hits the ball to left, when the righties hit it to right, it'll fade, and then they hit it to left, it'll hook. So just kind of rewiring the mind. I try to just do a little mental exercise and clear what I was doing in right and free myself for left. But that'd probably be the hardest thing.
Josh, I'm wondering, again, you were around these guys in spring training. Then the season started. Are clubhouses different once the season starts compared to spring training? Is there a different feel to them?
It's a little more of a team feel. As you guys know, spring training guys come and go. Certain guys are playing this day, and then some guys aren't, and there's a lot more guys. But now you got just your group that's working here and then your taxi group. So it's a little closer feel. Guys are a lot more competitive in this environment, and you don't have so much of the cycling, so you see the same guys every day. You get to know them a little better. So aside from the guys I already knew, I got to know a lot more guys more better, like Simeon and Matt and all these guys.
Josh, we're going to let you run and enjoy the rest of the off day. Thanks so much for doing this, man. Keep it going.
Thanks a lot. Good luck.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Josh Palacios of the Toronto Blue Jays. And we talked about this because ultimately, Teoscar Hernandez will be back. Mm-hmm. George Springer will be back. They could both be back when the Jays go to Tampa after the Red Sox series. Knock on wood, writing there's no setbacks with George Springer. And at that point, decisions are going to have to be made. And given the fact that the Jays are right now, at least in a run of games where they've got some off days, I don't know, maybe initially you would tend towards sending a pitcher down. Mm-hmm. Although given where this team's pitching is, I don't know if that necessarily works. But I got to say this. To me, first of all, when George Springer and Teoscar Hernandez are here, he got four outfielders now because he got Randall Grichuk, who's playing well, and you've got Lourdes Gurriel Jr.
Yeah.
So you're running out of room in the bench. Jonathan Davis is a guy this organization likes.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, though, Kevin. Josh Palacios does one thing, has one part of his game that we don't see enough of in this team, and that's he's a left-handed bat. Is that enough, do you think, for him to hang on to that job? Because we know that he can play. Now, Jonathan Davis can go get it. We know that Josh Palacios' defense, it seems to be.
Solid. Sure.
I don't know. I haven't seen him run bases, but I've got to think, based on what we've heard about him from the organization, that he certainly understands that part of the game. I'll ask you this right now, flat out, man. You got to choose between Jonathan Davis and Josh Palacios. I'm going with Palacios just because of the bat.
Yeah, I think for me they're almost about the same exact player. Does it have anything to do with him just going up there and standing left-handed?
Well, here's the thing, though. You don't need him to play center field when everybody's healthy. Because you're going to have center fielders coming out of the yin-yang when everybody's healthy. I mean, you're going to have George Springer in center field. You're going to have Randall Grichuk go to center field if you want.
Yeah.
And now, I know Jonathan Davis has played other outfield positions, but to me, his biggest strength is he can go get it. And that plays better in center field, I think. So I'm wondering if, on balance, maybe Josh Palacios isn't the guy. You know, again, you talked about what's he hitting with two strikes. Small sample size, I know, he's got an approach.
He's got an idea.
He's got an idea.
And I think he looks comfortable. Yeah, he even said it. He's comfortable with two strikes. You know, they've tried to put him in positions at the alternate site. You know, Dante have a plan before you walk up. Now look, I'm not sure exactly that I agree with their plan. I think you got to be a fastball first guy, and I've yelled and screamed that. I think trying to make a living off hitting breaking balls is just not going to happen. Like, it's going to look like it looks now. You know, the guys that can hit are going to hit regardless. You know, the Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s, Bo Bichette, you know, they're going to hit. Everybody else is streaky. Teoscar Hernandez, he's streaky. George Springer, have we even seen him enough to know what he is? Now, you know, we have it at one place. Have we seen it here? You know, moving to different ballparks, you know, going to Fenway, is that short porch and left going to do anything to George Springer? I know he's been there and done it a little bit before, but consistently doing that, is that going to matter? You hope not, because he's a veteran guy. Is he going to change his approach? You hope he can hit the ground running and help carry this team for a little while until everybody sort of falls in place. Look, that's a very hard question. I think it is. You have to ask yourself, for me, which one can hit velocity the best? That would be the one thing for me that stands out. Who's the guy that can stand over there or sit over there for 3 or 4 days and come off and play and start a game and look like he didn't miss a beat? That's the question you got to ask yourself. And whatever you think the answer to that is, that's the guy you take. We haven't seen enough of Josh to know that. With that being said, I would think you would take Jonathan Davis just because we've seen him more and we've seen him do it. And, you know, he did have 6 days between at-bats and did hit a homer in Kansas City. That's there's something to that.
Also got picked off first base.
Well, he has done some – he has had some mental mistakes. You know, he tried to steal third with Marcus Semien up at first base, who had hit a home run in a game. Those are things that can't happen at the big league level, and if they do happen, they only happen once. So it's numbered when it comes to that. And Charlie's even said it in his Zoom calls, that we're having to play people, meaning the Blue Jays, as an organization, that are having to play people early in the season that they normally would not have to play. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming it's the guys that we've been talking about. So, you know, this is all about the 26th man. How much big league time would a lot of guys have had if there was always 26 guys on a roster? You know, it's they're nice to talk about, but in the long run, you know, when push comes to shove, are they good enough, those two guys, to keep away from that extra bullpen arm that you can give the ball to for three outs and shut a team down in the sixth inning? The answer to that is probably no.
Well, the Blue Jays are still awaiting the regular season debut of George Springer. They are still, not still, but they are awaiting the return of Teoscar Hernandez from the COVID-19 list. Will those two players alone address the offensive issues currently face the Toronto Blue Jays? Mr. Barker will break that down for us when Baseball Central continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I don't even know, Barker, if we need to read out the numbers, do we? Because, do we need to read out where the Jays are with this offensive category and that offensive category and this offensive category?
I don't want to state the obvious. It'd be a little hard for me to do because...
No, you don't have wireless.
My cell phone's not working. But they ain't good.
Ow. Damn
it. Like, it's hitting when it matters. And you know, just state the obvious, guys are doing their job. And then to say that they need George Springer back leading off, to say that they need Teoscar Hernandez back hitting cleanup,
right,
and everybody else will fill in the blanks. You know, having Randall Grichuk hitting cleanup, look, I'm a fan of Randall's, but he ain't no cleanup hitter. Marcus Semien's not a leadoff hitter.
All right, you're going to have to, explain. Look, I understand. You're getting two real good hitters back without without question. Springer and Hernandez.
Yeah, I want to smother pitching early.
Okay.
Most of the time when starting pitcher has issues, it's the first inning. You know, instead of yesterday's was Semien, Bo, Vladdy, Grichuk. You get Springer back. Just having Springer back. Springer, Bichette, Vladdy, Teoscar, Gurriel Jr. That don't sound, I better have my stuff right when I'm coming in. It got to be good right out the gate. The other one, the one that they had yesterday, look, I can breathe a little and I can pitch around a couple of guys that are hot. You know, Bo's over swinging right now. How long can Bo do that?
Yeah, but
Bo is Bo.
He's going to have one of those games where he goes for four and that's fine.
He looks like he's carrying teams. You can throw your hands in the air, but it's the fact of when you got Springer back, who takes a little pressure off Bo. Bo now can go up and look middle away early in a count and hit a home run to right center. On a nice little easy approach, soft hands, down and through it. You know, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not saying he's not going to have that giant swing. He's had it since he's been here. But I'm saying it would help a little bit to have Springer in front of you. Maybe 1-0 wouldn't be too bad more times than Semien is. That's my point is. It's just right now people are out of place. You know, having Kevin Biggio hitting fifth in your order, how long can that last?
I'm with you. That's got to.
That's a hard thing to tell you. Even having Biggio hitting in the two spot.
He's got to be down. I'm with you. He's got to be down eighth or ninth.
There you go.
Where he may turn into something else. But right now, the thing I need Kevin Biggio to do for me, Kevin, is one, play good defense, and two, draw a walk and turn the lineup over.
Yeah, the swinging early.
Other than that, I'm not going to get
the swinging early thing may not work for him. It may not. That may not be who he is. Especially that on top of it, he's trying to play third base, which is he great at? Not sure about that. First moves and
you made the point earlier. They put a lot in this kid's plate.
They did. They were asking him to do a lot to play. Basically, go play great defense and drive in big runs, hitting in the five spot,
or be our number two guy. Or be our number two guy. Yeah, I'm with you.
It's a lot to ask.
So I think we're in agreement then. Springer comes back. You go Springer, Bo, Vladdy, Teoscar. Then where do you go from there?
Gurriel.
I'm sorry, Gurriel.
Gurriel, and then you could go Tellez, Grichuk hitting in the sixth spot. You can go Semien hitting in the seventh spot. You can go Danny Jansen. You're trying to hide Danny. Danny's playing. He ain't hitting. You got to hide him somewhere. You can't hit him ninth because that would mean Springer's coming up a lot of times with nobody on base. That's why you put Kevin in the ninth spot for me. And you walk up to him and tell him why. You're the second leadoff guy. I want you to get on base. I want you to go back being who you were. Forget about trying to hit with two strikes. Forget about worrying hitting with two strikes. ton of people don't know how to do that. A ton of people can't do that. You have a giant uppercut in your swing. Yeah. See, it is what it is.
At this point,
I want you to play halfway decent third.
At this point, we need you to do what you can do to
help
us win.
Get on base for the guy hitting in the leadoff spot.
Right.
Maybe he can run into one instead of hitting a solo shot. He can hit a two-run shot. That's what you want him to do. So the injuries, and then you're, then the bottom of your order is not Kirk. It's not the young guys that you're putting a lot of pressure on to get big hits when it matters. Okay. Like first and second, you got the bottom of the order coming up in the game yesterday.
You got Palacios, yeah.
Yeah, with Kirk and Palacios and
Jonathan Davis.
Jonathan Davis. That's a lot to ask. It really is.
Can I ask you about Kirk and Jansen? Because there's been so much going on here this year with this team that I think it gets talked about, but it kind of gets glossed over. Defensively, there are some issues behind the plate with Alejandro Kirk. He's easy pickings. And I understand that it's, you know, the stolen base often on the pitcher, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. To me, he is still a work in progress defensively. And I guess what I'm saying is, Kevin, the sum total of that position, I don't know if I'm getting enough both defensively and offensively right now. I don't know how you see it.
If everybody else is hitting, they're fine. Yeah, Kirk hasn't played above double.
Offensively. But I'm saying, are they good enough defensively for you?
I mean, Danny Jansen, everybody seems to love him. They love the way he receives it. They love the way he steals the low strike. Hit the running game, look, the pitchers aren't real good at holding runners on. We've seen that. The big moves, more worried about throwing strike one than controlling running games. Okay, the Greg Maddux theory is, forget about that guy. Mm-hmm. Worry about the guy standing at home plate. Okay, if you get him out 100% of the time, then that's okay. For me, if they had better options behind the plate, those two guys are probably not in the big leagues.
Right.
I mean, Danny Jansen, we love him. But offensively, he is a liability. Like, he does nothing offensively. And, again, when everybody else is hitting and they're scoring a ton of runs and everybody's healthy and doing what everybody else is supposed to be doing, okay, you can hide that. But when they're not, and then he comes up with a runner on second base and doesn't either move a runner over or doesn't drive a run in, and it's weak contact and it's swinging, you know, having non-competitive bats. You can have non-competitive bats where you're getting good pitches to hit and you're putting bad swings or you're fouling balls off. You should be hammering. Look, it's a performance-driven league. It is. And these are hard calls. Obviously, he is a great human, and the clubhouse loves him. You know, they live and die by the clubhouse thing. Oh, man, we got to have – I want great players. That's what I want. And it'll work itself out. When everybody gets back, that position will work itself out. How's that?
Let me throw a number at you. This surprised me. And I want to know if you think this number means anything or it's BS. This is going into yesterday's game. And we talked about the Jays have had issues, in air quotes, issues defensively, right? We had Marcus Semien's learning second base, Bo's shortstop, Cabin, Vladdy at first.
Yep.
Double plays made in the major leagues going into yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Tied for third, Seattle Mariners and Pittsburgh. Second, Tampa Bay Rays, 18. First in double plays made, Blue Jays, 19. Say anything to you at all? Does this surprise you? I saw that stat and I went, okay.
Well, it's scary because they have a lot of people on base. That'd be the first thing that would scare you.
Exactly.
Is that how long can that last? That's the first thing. That they are making those plays when they need to. Right. It's not the play right at you that you catch it right at you and throw it to the bag that you're supposed to throw it to. That's not the play. It's like you always say with Bo, when he starts speeding up and he has to think about where the ball's going, that's when things start
to
go.
You think I'm right about that, eh? No, when he, I think as long as he just has to react, he gets the ball at first base.
Don't take this the wrong way, but I don't think Bo's a shortstop. That's me. I might be one of the only ones that think that. But
you're not.
That's, you know, I think you'll get the fullest out of Bo Bichette playing second base every single day and offensively. And I think it'll keep him healthy longer. That's just me. Yeah. That's nice. That gets them out of trouble sometimes. I think their pitching's not their issue.
All right.
It's health where it matters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's offensively. You know, offensively, that they again, it gets back to that approach thing. Can you overthink it? You hear every time you hear somebody talk that comes on the MLB network that breaks something down with DeRozan, the first thing out of their mouth is, he says, what's the approach you use when you walk to the plate? I look fastball until I can't look fastball anymore. Okay. I mean, that's about as simple as you can get. Because I'm not going to make a living off hitting breaking ball. And the second thing out of their mouth is, the more fastballs I hammer, the more hanging breaking balls I get. Because what's a pitcher do? He gets a little bit more finer, and he knows he has to snap that thing off. When they start thinking and they think about what they have to do with it, what do they a lot of times do with it? They hang it. So that's the thing with me is, I don't know this. I'm not in the clubhouse and I'm not in the dugout, but it sure looks like they overthink it.
Mr. Barker, thank you for doing this. We will be back tomorrow and get you set for the Red Sox, the first place Red Sox, the rampaging Red Sox. And the Toronto Blue Jays, a two-game series. Hyunjin Ryu in the mound, Eduardo Rodriguez on the mound for the Red Sox.